So I hope everybody hears me. It seems to be okay. My beloved wife, Ruth, my beloved sister, Miriam, your magnificence, rector of the university, the honorable ambassador, David Pelleck, ambassador from the State of Israel, deans, rectors, dignitaries, the list is so long that I cannot repeat all of it, especially since I heard it for the first time. My lifelong friend, Dana Scott, my colleagues here within the audience, we are all fellow scientists. Some I even had the privilege to be the teacher of. All of you. First of all, I want to express my great, deep gratitude for this honor bestowed upon me, and which was done in such a generous and beautiful way. This is really an experience which I truly will never forget. Now, I want to share with you some personal view and some personal feelings I have about science, and in particular my way towards science. So I was a student at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. I had some very eminent teachers, including Amalie Frankel, and the person who under whom I did my master's degree on a thesis on solving a problem in commutative rings due to Emmy Noether, the late departed Jacob Levitsky. And then I had the good fortune to read Kleene's book, Metamathematics, and in it the paper on computability. And that was exactly the time when computer technology as technology was emerging. And people were talking about the wonders of IBM computers, who since then were enhanced in strength by probably 10,000 times or more. And I realized that here you have the technology, and what is also required is a scientific understanding of computing, a basic mathematical understanding of computing, and I wanted to devote much of my effort to this undertaking. Let me share with you a story which I think is amusing. A relative of mine, an eminent biologist in Israel, who is still alive and will remain nameless, you'll see why, met me at a family gathering. And he said, Michael, you're going to the United States, eventually to Princeton. What do you want to study there? And I said, I want to study the foundations of computing. The name computer science did not exist. And he sneered at me. And he said, what are computers good for? Just, you know, to do payroll, inventories. This is completely uninteresting. And I said, no, no, you see, you're a biologist. One day computers will be used to design biological molecules. And he looked at me, I was about 21 years old, he looked at me and he said, that will never happen. So, thus encouraged, I still went on to the United States. I ended up in Princeton. I studied logic, topology, and so on. And as was mentioned, in 1957, Dana Scott and I went to IBM. They were actually trying to recruit us. And we wrote that paper on finite automata and their decision problems, etc. That was all described here. A year later, on my own, I went again to IBM. And I wrote a paper which never appeared in print, but had a wide circulation as a research report. Namely, Turing made the distinction between computable and non-computable. And in that paper, which I called Degrees of Difficulty of Computing a Function, and a classification of recursive sets, I have demonstrated that there are degrees of difficulty, that there are solvable problems in the Turing sense, which are still much harder in terms of the effort or other computing resources, much harder than other solvable problems. So there is a hierarchy also within recursive or decidable sets. And that was probably the first paper written on what is now called the complexity of computations. So then I went on to combine logic on the one hand and to study the foundations of computing on the other hand. I must say that I had a very rapid advance within the academic ranks, but that was completely on the basis of my work on model theory and algebra and all that material on automata, complexity of computations, was absolutely disregarded by the mathematicians at the Institute of Mathematics at the Hebrew University. I didn't suffer from that, but I think it's an interesting historical comment. So later on, I, among other things, I extended the theory of automata to what are now known automata, finite automata, non-deterministic, they must be non-deterministic, automata on infinite trees. And that had very far-reaching implications. Let me mention two people of Polish origin, Poles, who had a great influence on me. One is Alfred Tarski, who in 1961 invited me to Berkeley. And I spent a year there, a very scientifically interesting, profitable year. And the other one is Andrei Mostovsky. So, by the way, he also had a prediction which didn't quite turn out to be right. When I told him that I want to create a theory of automata on infinite trees and prove that the second, so-called second-order theory, the non-mathematicians will excuse me, for throwing in this technicality, that the second order theory of two successor functions is decidable and that this has such enormous implications and consequences. Mostovsky, who at the time was visiting me in Jerusalem, said, well, Michael, now is the time to prove that this is undecidable. Fortunately, it turned out to be decidable. So that was one great thrill, finally settling that question. And let me mention another great thrill that I had. And I really wish on every one of us to have such moments in their scientific or artistic career, because there is a very close relationship, in fact, between the way we do science, if we do interesting science, and the way artistic accomplishments are achieved. So I came to MIT, in fact, after I was rector, and I wanted to get back into science. And I heard from Gary Miller about his primality test, which used the extended Riemann hypothesis. Never mind what that is. It's an important hypothesis. So it was unfinished. And then I had the idea, it's impossible to say where, from where. This was done, by the way, also by Strassen and Solovey. I was independent of them, and I had a better test eventually. But the idea was to use randomization, randomness, tossing coins in order to determine whether a number is prime. An absolutely crazy idea. And now I come to one of the great moments in my life, sort of in addition to getting married and to have our wonderful daughters and to have our wonderful grandchildren and so on. So one of the great moments, I told about that to Von Pratt, a name familiar to many of you because among other things he's also working, and a brilliant man in program verification. And he said, why leave it theoretical? It's such an efficient test. I'll program it. So he programmed it in Lisp, a very slow language. And we were using a PDP-10. That was a computer which is probably 10,000, by a factor of 10,000 slower than the present existing, than the laptops we all have. And then he called me up, I think it was in November 1975, he called me up at midnight, and he said, I'm sitting in the lab. Michael, take pencil and paper and write down 2 to the 400 minus 593 is a prime. It took 3 minutes to do that computation. And then we looked for so-called twin primes. And within 10 minutes, we discovered twin primes which were by 10 orders of magnitude, at least, bigger than any known twin primes at the time. So it doesn't matter how those were described. They were described very succinctly. I didn't have to write a very long number to see these results. Literally, my hair stood on end. And these were just some of the results. And then later on, it turned out that this is so efficient that it is really the basis of modern cryptography. So there are these enormous rewards, which I personally was so, emotional rewards, which I personally was so fortunate to get. There is an old Hebrew saying that one should study and devote himself or herself to learning, not in order to obtain prizes, but for the value, for the intrinsic value of learning on its own. And that is absolutely true, because those feelings are really as important and as wonderful it is to get honorary degrees, meet new wonderful people through that. Of course, Leszek and I know each other for many years, and maybe also get monetary prizes. Nothing really compares to the satisfaction that you were able to discover some truth. So I'm going to end my, hopefully, I hope you feel short remarks, by quoting something which I read in a wonderful book by Francis Crick. He wrote a book called Oh, What a Mad Pursuit. And that was his version of the discovery of the double helix. It was written with wonderful British understatement instead of the famous double helix book, which is in the style I discovered, I realized, I solved, I explained to Crick, and so on. Instead of that, he writes it really in great understatements. And one thing which he says, people asked him, how is it to live with, they called it the golden helix. How is it to live with a golden helix? And he said, and he writes it in the book, I'll quote a painter, a very well-known painter, who came and gave a lecture at Cambridge. And then somebody asked him, what is the most important thing about painting, about you painting a beautiful, great picture? And the man said, the most important thing about painting a beautiful picture is being there, present, while that picture is being painted. So I was really fortunate to be present while some, I think also universally accepted as beautiful pictures, were being painted. Thank you very much.